Welcome to In the Embrace, a podcast focused on discussing insights on disabilities. We have two goals. First, to build awareness of the lived experiences and realities of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their allies. And second, to offer life-affirming, practical approaches for some of the more common challenges they may face. We will also celebrate the outstanding accomplishments and advances and support mechanisms, policies, and indeed the accomplishments of those living with disabilities. Our guests will include people with disabilities, parents, caregivers, and professionals. Hi, I'm Nicole Atang, Executive Director of the FIU Embrace Center for Advancing Inclusive Communities, where we aim to empower differently abled persons to live at their fullest potentials through research and innovative programming and community engagement and professional skills development. As always, we welcome you to learn more about our work at FIU Embrace and our programs and services to support individuals with disabilities by visiting fiuembrace.fiu.edu or scanning the QR code now on your screen. In today's session, we address grief, and more specifically, how to move from grief to action. And experienced parents with children diagnosed with disabilities are familiar with a common thread that starts with understanding the diagnosis and continues through the life course. It is an unwelcome companion that follows us throughout our life. The more chronic grief comes in waves that can overtake our daily lives. With me today is Dr. Yogi Hernandez-Suarez, Senior Associate Dean for Student Affairs at the Hubert Wertheim College of Medicine at FIU, and Associate Professor for Obstetrics and Gynecology. Today, Yogi will be speaking with me as a parent. She's here to share her lived experience. Welcome, Yogi.
Hello.
Thank you for being with us.
Hello, Nicole. I'm glad to be here with you.
I want to start off with asking you a bit about what it was like in the early days when you just became a parent. Could you share that with us?
Sure. I actually appreciate the opportunity to visit some of that with you. I think for many of us with children with disabilities, and particularly developmental or intellectual disabilities, a lot of the early times with them are a blur. There's so much going on and so much that is unlike the journey of our other peers. But the invitation to come and talk with you gave me a chance to reflect a little bit about those early days. We have twins, and they had a normal development until about the age of 2.5, and then they had regression of speech. And like many parents, and this was 32 years ago, we were told, oh, it's because they're being exposed to a different language. We had just moved to Miami. But my husband and I are both physicians, and we both knew that there was something more going on. Mm-hmm. I remember one particular moment when we went to, at that time, you go to see a lot of doctors. You move from physician to physician. And we had one neurologist who threw a ball at my son, and my son did not catch it. And he said, your son has autism, and it is, you know, significant. And, you and your husband may need to consider institutionalizing him.
Wow.
And I just remember looking at my husband like this was so beyond anything that we had expected to hear. And later in that same day, you see sort of a cavalcade of professionals. We saw a woman who was an educational psychologist, and she was doing an assessment of my son. And she turned to me and she said, he's very sweet. That is really going to help you. And I never forgot that. And that phrase has frankly stuck with me and helped me through many moments. My son is not verbal, and that is something that for two intellectuals, you know, who are both very, I would say I'm more verbal than my husband, but it has been a process of coming to a place, frankly, where I can even have a conversation about it with you. And I imagine I will share that you and I are friends, and so
yes.
I know you also have a journey.
Yes.
And you know, everybody's journey is different, mm-hmm. and so I think it would be good for everyone to hear sort of your early days as well.
So Kelly, when Kelly was born, it was a beautiful C-section. I was awake, right? The advances of modern
yes,
medicine.
Yes.
But they quickly put me to sleep because when she was born, they can visually see that there was something wrong with her eyes. And I think the doctors did not know how to speak to me. I was in my early 20s. And they whisked the baby
yes.
out of the operating room fairly quickly, and I was out for certainly a few hours. And when I came to, I remember the surgeon struggling to say the words. Mm. And I kept saying to him, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. I think I was in pure shock
yeah.
and disbelief. And at the time, because they didn't know what was wrong with Kelly and her eyes looked very abnormal, they sealed the room that I was in. And so people had to gong up,
yes.
Mask up to come
yes.
in. And so the nurses did not come in that often.
Yeah.
And that time alone sort of was impactful.
Yes.
Because I had to sit with that grief for a long time alone. And my husband at the time could not, like most men and women, couldn't deal. And so he stayed away. And so I spent the better part of 3 days alone mm-hmm. in that room mm-hmm. with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I made a point at that time that we were going to get through this somehow. I did not understand in those 3 days what my journey would have been like.
Sure. I don't think anyone at that time can really visualize the whole arc. And perhaps it's good that we can't, because it's overwhelming. It is interesting. I think the concept of being alone in grief is real, even when you have others around you. I heard a woman describe at one point she was so overwhelmed with what was happening, she just fell to the ground, and everyone tried to help her up. But afterwards, what she said was, what I really wanted was people to kind of stay down there with me,
right.
And recognize what I needed was to be
right.
sort of at rock bottom there.
Right.
And that visual stuck with me because I think what we need in our grief is different for different people. And, you know, we overuse the word empathy. But in dealing and trying to support, because I have dear friends, you have dear friends, family members, well-meaning. It is the, you know, it's not the golden rule. I've heard it described as the platinum rule. So don't treat others as you would want to be treated, but treat others as they would want to be treated. And it may not look like the way that you think you need to show up.
Right.
Because the process is, I'm sure it feels the same for you. And you used it in when you said the opening. It is like a wave. It comes and goes. And because we have children with developmental disorders, every developmental milestone is that reminder, that
yes.
reframing, that repositioning of your reality,
But certainly holidays.
Yes.
Right? So holidays is difficult.
Yes, it is.
Christmas is hard. Easter is hard. Watching your friends' children go out
sure.
and enjoy themselves.
Right.
And really take advantage of what
right.
it means at that time of year. And for us, it can be difficult with our children. I'm fortunate to have a second child who does not have a disability. And for me, while there are times that I am grateful
yes.
for her, it definitely shows the stark contrast.
Yes, the dichotomy.
Between the
yes.
two lives.
Yes.
And at one point, point, I want to celebrate. But actually, at the other point, deep inside, I am crying for Kelly.
Yeah.
And I don't, and it's that mixed of emotions in any given situation that is so difficult pretty much throughout our lives.
So
right?
I brought a poem.
Sure, share it
there,
with us.
There is a poem by a woman named Emily Pearl Kingsley. And some of our listeners may be familiar with it, but I think it frames our reality so well that it's worth a read. So,
sure, go ahead.
So here it is. When you're going to have a baby, it's like planning a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and make your wonderful plans, the Colosseum, the Michelangelo, David, the gondolas of Venice. You may learn some handy phrases in Italian. It's all very exciting. After months of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. You pack your bags and off you go. Several hours later, the plane lands. The stewardess comes on and she says, "Welcome to Holland." "Holland," you say. "What do you mean, Holland? I signed up for Italy. I'm supposed to be in Italy. All my life, I've dreamed of going to Italy." "But there's been a change in the flight plan. They've landed in Holland, and there you must stay. The important thing is that they haven't taken you to a horrible, disgusting, filthy place full of pestilence, famine, and disease. It's just a different place. So you must go out and buy new guidebooks, and you must learn a whole new language, and you must meet a whole new group of people that you never would have met. It's a different place. It's a slower pace than Italy, less flashy than Italy. But after you've been there for a while and you catch your breath, you look around and you begin to notice that Holland has windmills and Holland has tulips. Holland even has Rembrandts. But everyone you know is busy coming and going from Italy, and they're all bragging about what a wonderful time they had there. And for the rest of your life, you will say, yep, that's where I was supposed to go. That's what I had planned. And the pain of that will never, ever, ever go away, because the loss of that dream is a very, very significant loss. But if you spend your life mourning the fact that you didn't get to Italy, you may never be free to enjoy the very special, the very lovely things about Holland. And I have to say that has framed a lot for me. We have a poster of a bunch of windmills in my house to remind us of the beauty and joy and frankly delight that our son brings us. He is valuable and worthy of being on planet Earth and contributes. He has changed lives. He's certainly changed ours. Mm-hmm. And we strive to bring him joy and meaning in every way that we can. And for that reason, you know that we are very involved and grateful for Embrace and the alliance that we have with FIU and the value that FIU as a university has given to the community of people who love and care for and support adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm. What a moving poem. You know, as you were reading that, I was thinking about exactly that. I could see the visions of you know, that time travel from Kelly being first diagnosed to now at 32.
Yes.
My daughter is also 32. So where would you say you are now on your grief journey?
Well, I'm stable enough to sit here with you. And yes. I can tell you that there were many years in my life where I struggled to have sort of cogent conversations about this outside of our nuclear family. Not I hope so much because of shame, but just being overwhelmed emotionally and I'm a professional. I've continued my practice. I've cared for my patients. It's interesting when David was first diagnosed, we thought about all those things. Should I stop working? Should I change our career trajectory? And my mother, who's very wise, she said, you know, David did not come into the world to destroy you. David
Right.
is here to be a part of us, and that includes being who you are too. And it has been extraordinary for me to continue to care for women. That's my career, as you know, as an obstetrician gynecologist. And I can't tell you the days where those interactions, those were with patients, were just as therapeutic for me
yes.
as they were for the patients, in that it allowed me a chance to be myself, to have meaning, to contribute in a way that did not. For many years, I felt that, you know, I'm an autism mom, and
yes.
that's not all that I am.
That's just a part of you.
That is correct.
I understand, you know, that point of view well. I most of Kelly's younger years was focused on Kelly and all of the services and everything that I had to bring to her. And so people will ask me, what do you do? I'm a mom of a disabled child.
Yes.
And that meant a lot at the time because it helped her. But I also felt deflated mm-hmm. because I also had a career and wanted to move forward in my career. And I know that there are parents out there that have made a tremendous sacrifice,
yes.
right, in terms of leaving their careers behind in order to give to their children. And that, again, comes with some grief of losing a part of who you are. So this whole notion of grief is complex. And I could see as Ashley continues to grow and she's going to get married and have children, while I will be celebrating those things, there will be times of sadness in my life to come. So I know you said that you're here today being able to speak about this. What did it take to get you here?
Well, I'll be frank. I mean, I think it has taken a lot of, and I'll use the word work, right?
Yeah.
So that therapy and the support of a clinical therapist, the support of, I would say, a select group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't for everybody.
Yes.
It's interesting how socially isolating it can be. But the people who choose to go on the long journey with you are gold.
Yeah.
And clearly they're doing it because they love you. And I know that they love my kids.
Yeah.
And that has been, you know, a game changer for me to have the support of friends. I'm an only child. So I'm sort of lonely on the planet as it is, but I have had, you know, dear friends who have been with us from the beginning, who showed up even when things got very ugly.
Yeah.
And did not add to the drama and did not add to the shame, but rather
stood by
that, you know, standing with, I
yeah.
think, has been great. I have a lucky me. I have a great marriage and a partner who is supportive in the work, and not everybody is.
Yeah.
And that alignment has meant everything, and has, you know, 37 years later, has given us the strength to now start to think about, mm-hmm. you know, what would have been unthinkable. You know, how do we retire? How do we find, you know, pleasure or travel, or, I mean, all that stuff was just unimaginable
yep.
Before. And I'll say, my generation of parents is probably still pretty traumatized
right.
because back when there were very little supports, we were encouraged to be the therapist, right?
Yes.
We all learned,
yes.
you know, ABA, and we learned, you know, how to prompting and scripting, and we got gypped out of, you know, regular parenting.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that, you know, modern medicine has, and clinical practices have changed, and insurance coverage have changed, all through work and advocacy, right? And
mm-hmm.
and feedback from families to not pathologize that relationship, and to allow parents to be parental as opposed to therapeutic in their relationship with their children. That's been part of the joy for me, is just showing up for my kids as a parent.
So I have another question for you, but I want to weave in, before we get to that, I want to weave in something that you said earlier. You said it a couple of times, is this notion of having people that will stand with you, and your support system, right? Mm-hmm. And typically a support system, we've learned to be supporters ourselves, mm-hmm. but to fix things and to make it better for our friends who are in pain. And this is not something that can be fixed. It's not something that anything
that
can
goes
be,
away
that can be done about it. Right.
Right.
And so I think our friends had to learn to just stand with us.
Yes.
And I think that's an important point. You talked about that woman who fell to the floor
right.
earlier on. And I think our friends had to learn how to stand with.
Yes.
Right. And not try to fix, because there's nothing that can be done, but certainly be a true support. And so for the new parents, the parents, newly minted parents who
yes.
are coming to the table sort of fresh with the diagnosis that their child or children have a disability, what would you say to them in this journey of grief? What advice would you give them, both for the newly minted parents and certainly for the ones that are moving on through their life course?
It's hard to, I guess I don't want to offer advice so much, because it sounds like a platitude almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like time helps. Yes, time helps. But I guess I would say, when you can, allow yourself to be helped. And allow people to stand with you who want to stand with you. There's a lot of shame and disbelief at the beginning.
Yes.
As clinicians, both of us, my husband and I think we're in a unique position to understand, and I don't want to say accept, but understand and get to the acceptance of the diagnosis easier than
right.
for many parents. And I think the people who try to help you either get there too fast or slow it down, these are not helpful people.
Mm-hmm.
The people who, as you say again, and as I've said, sort of stand by and accept the speed of your journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that can just mean coming by and spending time in your home, perhaps when the disruption in your home or the oddities in your home
yes.
would keep others away.
Yes, yes.
Being able to have a cogent conversation about what's happening without having to sugarcoat it, without having to think about how that person will respond or how they will react. It meant so much to us to have friends
yes.
who we just knew would just wanted to be there with us, and we didn't have to sugarcoat anything. We could cry if we wanted to cry. We could laugh if we needed to laugh. And they never looked oddly at our children, never, disappeared from our lives. Now, many did.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another conversation on grief, is letting go of the social expectations for yourself, not
yes.
just your children. And maybe that's a conversation for another time.
Yes.
But I guess if I could offer anything is, let the real people come in, and don't be ashamed, and let them stand with you. Try to take some of their energy. You will need it.
I will also say to them, try to get out and enjoy Holland.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yes.
It's hard to find joy in everyday life,
yes.
For
yes.
us.
Yes.
I will say for me, it's sometimes it's very
yes.
hard to find joy. But I would encourage people to go out and
yes.
try to find a little bit of joy and acknowledge
yes.
how difficult
yes.
life is, right? I think having these kinds of conversations with friends will help you along that journey.
Right.
I know that we were not lucky to be able to have these kinds of public conversations
no.
early on.
No.
Nor do I think we were ready for that.
Yes, yes.
But certainly speak in the way that you're comfortable with, and be. So Yogi, thank you. Thank you for joining us on the first of many podcasts to come. Certainly honest and brutal conversations, I think, at times. And hopefully you'll join us again for another
conversation. I would be so happy to. I'm very grateful for the work that FIU is doing.
Thank you.
We in the community acknowledge and appreciate it.
Now, thank you for joining us for In the Embrace. I'm happy that you could sit with us today on our first podcast. And I'm welcoming you back to join our conversations, to be a part of this community, and to speak with us. Until then, until the next podcast, thank you.